It's 88.5 KCS, and really happy to welcome Albert Hammond Jr. to the station. Welcome.
Thank you, man. How you doing?
We're doing great. You've got your latest solo effort out, Momentary Masters, which yeah. I understand. Will you tell the story of where you got the title from?
Yeah, it's the last couple hours before I had to decide. I was listening to this Carl Sagan little piece on YouTube called Pale Blue Dot. It's a book. It's also in his show Cosmos. And it's something I used to listen to a lot to just kind of relax and kind of get out of myself. I just liked all the things he would say. And then he said this phrase, Momentary Masters, and it just stuck with me. And it just seemed in a gut feeling like it would just fit with the record and it would age well with the album, and that it had it just so many different ideas and thoughts came to me when I said those words that I just, I liked that. I didn't go really deeper than that. Like, I didn't ask myself, well, what does it mean towards the record? I was just like, oh, that's how I feel.
The first reaction, the gut reaction was so positive, and you said, okay.
Sometimes you just, you go with your gut, and then you can tweak it or think about it. And sometimes you just go with it and it just feels, something about it feels right.
You know? You can't think your way out of it.
Yeah.
It still keeps holding up.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like that's more powerful than coming up with a reason.
Yeah. And it does have a significance, you know, obviously the passages you were referring to, it did talk about our individual place in the cosmos. So in that sense, it gives you a, okay.
Yeah, I mean, when he's talking, that whole speech is just wonderful. How it just kind of, I don't know what it does for me, it just centers me. Some people get depressed when they hear it, I've been told during interviews. Like, really, that made me very sad. It's like, oops, sorry. he's talking about our place and just that everything we've ever known is from here. And so that kind of just pulls you out of yourself.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
a lot of artists pursue a, quote, solo career for a variety of reasons. What's yours?
Yeah. I fell in love with music with Buddy Holly when I was in my early teens. And that's when I just realized I wanted, well, then I just wanted to see if I could do it, but I just thought I'd give it all my effort to see if I could write, sing, and play. I wasn't good at any of them. And, but I, you know, I just, there was something about it that was super exciting, just the creating something.
And Buddy Holly, you know, on Buddy Holly, when you think, and it's hard for us to put it into context, but writing, singing.
That was new.
And playing. Yeah. He was one of the first to really, yeah, like, take control of, yeah, all aspects.
That wasn't really happening then. You were a singer, and someone wrote songs for you. Everyone had a part to play. Yeah, so I just got into that, and I was fortunate enough to meet people as I was growing up and join a band, and then it became the Strokes, and we were successful. And then when we kind of stopped, yeah, I just kind of skipped over a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And then when, well, I just, I'm trying to, and here's it. The short version. Made it. Yeah, I don't know. I just, well, I do know. We stopped touring, and I wanted to create a career out of music, and I just gotten out of rehab, and I was kind of lost for 2 years, just not just emotionally and mentally. Right. I was just kind of didn't know who I was, and kind of when things started coming back to me, I just got really excited about what I could do and just how powerful I could be if I put my focus and energy into something,
and having that clarity.
Oh yeah,
when you get newly sober, that many artists have shared, they have to figure out, you know, they're not used to.
Yeah, you're always like a new character.
Yeah,
you don't know. I mean, it's not even about music, just in life in general. I felt out of the loop for about 2 years. I was like, wait, what's happening? But then when I got it back, I kind of felt that same love I found when I was younger.
of your father's music, and yes. But I didn't know as much about your father's music as I thought I did. And I came to realize that the guy had written some of the biggest hits for continually.
Talk about a shadow.
And I mean, now the question I would ask, because, you know, everyone here knows it because he wrote an anthem, obviously, for Southern California. But he wrote so many massive, massive international and worldwide hits. Some of the great songs of all time. Did he, in any way, shape, or form, you know, influence you to become a musician? Stay out of it? Was there any?
I mean, there was a good balance of it. He definitely never pushed me to do it. You know, I think he was, it's going to sound wrong, but I think he was like busy working. So he wasn't like, I could go to the studio. I could always hang out with him, but it wasn't like, he was like, you want to do this?
He was just, he didn't sit you on your lap and say, now we'll write a chorus.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It wasn't like that. It was very much like, that's what it becomes normal.
Observe.
You grow up with it. So you know, that's what your dad does for work. So you're not thinking like, wow, look at that. It's cool. You're just kind of like, yeah, that's what he does.
Do you think that?
I think, of course, it affected me in some way.
It informed you?
I almost feel like when I fell in love with it myself, it's almost like I needed that to know that I wanted to do it so that I had my own attachment to it and it wasn't through him. And then he always gave me great advice about, he wanted to make sure that I actually loved doing it and was curious about it and didn't just want to be famous. So he kept it made me feel like I knew from the beginning that I wasn't doing it just for that. I mean, of course, there's a part of you can't deny that you want to be successful at it.
Right.
If you're trying to do it. I mean, it's not your first instinct, but, you know, it's almost two different worlds. That's what's so funny. When you're creating, it's got almost nothing to do with
the outcome.
Anything besides this little world of putting things together and you get this ultimate excitement that beats any kind of what you would call success from, like, you know, someone plays your song on radio or you sell records. You know, you get this amazing feeling from creating it that you want to show people. But then from that, obviously, as you get older, you're like, well, let's see if I can do this as a living. I have to do something. I'd rather do this. but yeah, he was, you know, an integral part in just making sure I was disciplined.
We'll be right back. You're playing tonight at a tremendous room, the Terragram Ballroom, and it's sold out. I would assume maybe you had some sort of relationship with the proprietor, Michael Swire.
I do. His rooms are always designed for sound. You know, it's more like Mercury Lounge is one of the few small clubs that actually has like sandbags underneath, so you don't get a bass trap. It's not like a hollow stage, you know, and when I didn't understand it or appreciate it as much as I do now. And well, it's a new room downtown. Just seems great, right?
You've handed us a great work with Momentary Masters.
Thanks, man.
We're excited about it. The songs you've played today were great. And, of course, tonight, the lucky ones that have tickets to the sold-out show are going to enjoy your performance at the Terragram Ballroom. I'm sure we'll see you back soon. You know, there's all the talk about your day job, per se. So, you know, we'll save that for another conversation the next time down the road. But right now, let's focus on Albert Hammond Jr. and all good things come to you.
Appreciate it, man.
Thanks for coming out today.
Thank you for having me.
It's Albert Hammond Jr. live on 88.5 KCSN.